Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. On April 2nd and 3rd, members of the UC Student Workers Union United Auto Workers Local 2865 staged a two-day strike. The union said the strike was meant to draw attention to, quote, unfair labor practices by the university and its concern about the university's unwillingness to bargain over key aspects of the students' employment and a pattern of intimidation by UC administration, end quote. The union has filed a series of charges against the UC system, ranging from threats to international students' visa status who participate in union activity to unlawful videotaping and calling legal strikes illegal. The union represents 13,000 student workers across the UC system, including teaching assistants, graduate student instructors, and graduate and undergraduate tutors. 20 people were arrested on April 2nd for blocking traffic at UC Santa Cruz. And in recent years, there have been UC-wide protests over budget cuts, tuition hikes, and union contracts with UC administration. On today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by taking a look at UC graduate students' working conditions, their grievances, their demands, and then the larger question, what this says about the current state of higher education. Today, we're joined by Josh Brahinsky. He's an anthropologist and a PhD student at UC Santa Cruz in the History of Consciousness Department. Josh is active with the Academic Workers for a Democratic Union and is on the bargaining team for the Santa Cruz Union of the local union. Josh was the first person to be arrested on the first day of the strike at UC Santa Cruz, and he joins us from San Jose. Hi, Josh. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, nice to have you. We're also joined by Caroline McCusick. She's a PhD student in anthropology and a member of the union's executive board at UC Davis. Hi, Caroline. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
And Krista Cortez is a first-year doctoral student at the UC Berkeley School of Education and one of the head stewards of the Berkeley unit of the UAW. Hi, Krista. Thanks for coming on.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. So, well, first off, let's just go over a very basic question. Josh, can you just give us a few examples of what these grad students actually do?
Graduate students, what do we do? We are among the frontline teachers, so we're the people that spend, we're the ones who have the most intimate connection with the undergraduates. We spend a lot of time in small classes with 30 students or 15 students, if that's what we do when things work well. We're the ones who have office hours, and we grade their papers, and we spend time teaching them to, you know, to read critically and to write and to run their labs well. You know, we run the labs. We also do a lot of the research that the UCs produce. We're the ones who actually take care of the mice and make sure that they, but also do the experiments on them and look at the data and analyze the data and put it together. So I think we're the folks kind of with our feet on the ground, and that gives us a perspective that is probably different than everybody else. And that's partly why we're so concerned about the class sizes, because we end up actually having the experience of 300 students and one teaching assistant, and we know what that's like for teaching, and we know what that's like for the undergrads who, you know, a quarter of them sell the class, and those are the ones from the least supported communities. So that's a real problem, and we can feel it.
Hmm. Well, how new is that to have a class of 300 people with one teaching assistant? I mean, how long has that been going on?
It's something that I heard about it a couple years ago, sort of intermittently, and you know, you hear, okay, someone said that happened once. But it's become something system-wide that's happening in regular ways. Some departments are much worse than others, and there's, you know, there's still a lot of small classes out there, but it's growing in a very significant way. I can think off the top of my head right now just at Santa Cruz, which is one of the smaller UCs. There's at least one, two, three, four, five classes that are running right now where, right at this moment, where graduate students are working as teaching assistants, and they have between 150 and 300 students each.
Wow.
So it's growing.
And Caroline, what would you add to that? What do we need to know about what graduate students do? What kind of work do you do?
Well, I'm a TA for an upper division anthropology class. And in my department, we've seen the class sizes growing over the years because the UC administration has a funding policy where they fund a department based on the number of students in the seats. So when departments can pack giant lecture halls, they have more money to operate. And when we're operating on a thin margin, graduate students like me can't get funding from our department to do our research. And so the department tries to increase class sizes on the behest of the UC administration in order to stay afloat, in order to stay competitive, in order to keep being able to do education and research. So UC administration has created this scenario where the people on the ground, the people who are doing the research and education, are caught in this bind between fulfilling their basic everyday duties.
And Krista, you're a first-year doctoral student at the UC Berkeley School of Education. What do you do?
So I am a first-year student, and I think it's important to highlight the fact that, you know, I haven't been made available any teaching positions, and I know a lot of students who are in my cohort or are first years as well in the School of Education come in with limited funding. And, you know, we rely on these GSI positions, so graduate student instructor positions, in order to fund ourselves, in order to just, you know, pay rent and buy groceries. And the fact that one GSI is responsible for so many students limits the number of positions available. And so there's a lot of us who are out here who are struggling looking for work, and that goes into all sectors, you know. We're looking for work beyond the UC just to make ends meet.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that later in the show, because I understand that a lot of grad students are also on food stamps because they say that they're not paid enough to make ends meet. But before we talk about that, Caroline, the UC Student Workers Union United Auto Workers Local 2865 represents 13,000 students. Can you talk about how all of these students became unionized? Can you give us a brief history?
Sure. Well, the struggle to unionize grad student workers at the UC has been going on for decades. Or it was going on for decades before we finally formed a union. The UC didn't want to recognize the right of student workers to form a union because they claimed that we weren't workers. We were apprentices, and that meant that we were receiving training instead of doing a job. It took decades of battles, general strikes, and work actions by student workers before the UC finally recognized our right to form a union, our right to collective bargaining. We formed our union in 1999. And currently, UC still holds the same position vis-a-vis research assistants. They claim that they are not workers. They claim that they're apprentices, and they still don't recognize the right to collective bargaining. So UC's hostile attitude to student workers on the UC campuses has a history. It has a long genealogy, and it's been going on for a long time. And it's taken a lot of fight from us in order to get our rights recognized.
What would you say to people who are surprised that you're represented by a union, or maybe think, well, you're a student, this is what you're supposed to do for your training?
Well, I would simply say that if you see that the work that we do, you'll see that it's comparable to the work that, say, a teacher does, which is recognized as work, and teachers are recognized as workers. While we do gain skills from our work as teaching assistants, so do other workers. And the tactic by the UC administration to deny us the status of workers is a strategic one that's intended to get as much work out of us as possible for as cheap as possible. And collective bargaining has given us the power to struggle over our working conditions and to say, no, wait, these class sizes are not acceptable. And we have a position from which we can say that this is a problem. We have a history of labor law that says that workloads are protected, and we can fight over that. This is not simply a definition. This is a definition that has effects in the world. And UC has been fighting against the right of students to unionize for a reason.
What is the typical workload for a teaching assistant? How many hours a week do you work?
Well, on paper, we're only supposed to work 20 hours a week maximum. But lots of students work much more simply because when you're in this relationship where you're a teaching assistant for, say, a professor in your department or a professor that you don't want to piss off for whatever reason, it can become hard to say no to work. And people can work far over their hours. Under our contracts, they have the right to get compensated for that time, but a lot of people are scared to do so because of a sort of hostile attitude that the UC has created for student workers to try to speak up about these kinds of things. And so one thing we've been fighting for is to enforce our workload protections and to make sure the UC knows that they simply can't push through these giant classes, and they can't get away with making us work over our hours to teach too many students and to provide them with a lower quality education.
And what is the typical pay for a teaching assistant who works 20 hours, supposed to work 20 hours a week?
Our workers usually make around $17,000 a year, which is considered very low income in most of the counties where UCs are located.
And does that include health care and benefits?
We get health care, yeah, and we get some child care benefits, but we've had to fight for all of those over the years.
Hey, Krista, how would you answer that question, or what would you say to people who might say you're a professional student, you work inside the UC system, and you're gaining experience? Why do you think you should be a member of a union doing this kind of work?
Well, I think that that's absolutely true, that first and foremost, I am a student, and I came here to learn. And part of that learning takes place in classrooms and interacting with undergraduates and interacting with faculty and planning curriculum and, you know, tackling these really important issues. But in order to be that student, I have to be able to sustain myself. You know, I need a place to stay. I need food. And so I have to work. And so I become a student worker. You know, hyphenated identity, and this is not unusual. I don't understand why this concept of being a student worker is unusual, because at the end of the day, I mean, it makes sense, right, that I need to work in order to have an income. But the idea that I'm not allowed to unionize, the idea that I'm not allowed to protect myself against the institution, against my employer, I mean, I think is very problematic. And I feel like we are unfairly kind of, you know, isolated and marginalized as activists, as radical, because we just believe in protecting ourselves and others like us.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about the grievances, because in addition to unfair labor practices, the union said the strike was also meant to draw attention to intimidation, including threats to international students' visa status who participate in union activity, to unlawful videotaping, and calling legal strikes illegal. So Krista, what are your main grievances?
I think first and foremost for me, the idea that I'm striking illegally, that the strike is unlawful, that there's no reason for me to strike, I take personal offense to that. I mean, like I said before, first and foremost, I'm a student. You know, that's my primary identity. And so the way the UC has been approaching us striking and the attention we're trying to bring to these unfair labor practices really is a cause for concern, because to question how we feel about education, the value we place on education, given the fact that we're devoting, I mean, many of us, upwards of 6, 7, 8 years of our lives to, you know, pursuing, creating knowledge, right? Pursuing, you know, the furthering of, like these great projects and answering these questions. I mean, to think that I would want to sacrifice that just because, to me, like I said, is a personal offense.
And Josh, what would you add to that? What are your main grievances? And can you also talk about accusations of intimidation?
Well, I mean, at Santa Cruz, we had the director of the writing department took a bunch of students who work for him and who he makes basically unilateral decisions about hiring, and said to them, if you strike, you'll never work in this department again. Hmm. And that's obviously illegal, that's intimidation. And there's a pattern of that sort of activity in the UCs that's been growing. And that's been their response to union activity, you know, increasingly over the last 6 months. So that's what the strike was about. And in fact, when we were arrested, when I was arrested, I was legally picketing. And it was just sort of an example of them escalating that, you know, they made a bunch of threats. They said, we're going to fire you. This is illegal. You're going to lose your visa status, all that kind of stuff. But then actually, when I was picketing legally and had actually just gone to the executive vice chancellor, who was standing there, and said, by the way, I'm going to go picket. I'm not blocking traffic. I'm going to do it in the crosswalk. I just told her all the different sort of, you know, careful legal things. There were 8 police blocking my way, and they said, this is your last chance. So I turned around and started to go the other way, and they, you know, dragged me to the ground. So that was them planning. And in fact, you know, they had brought 30 police in from university, from UCSF and from Berkeley, all up in riot gear, and, you know, they didn't want people from the community who would know us, who wouldn't beat us up. So they brought those folks in, and they were standing there with a big bus ready to arrest a whole bunch of people. So that's a grievance, and that's something that people are really, really upset about. There's been a huge amount of mobilization and support for us after in response to this escalation.
That is Josh Brahinsky. He's an anthropologist and a PhD student at UC Santa Cruz in the History of Consciousness Department. He is active in the Academic Workers for a Democratic Union and on the bargaining team for the Santa Cruz unit of the local union. He was one of the first people to be arrested when grad student workers went on strike on April 2nd and 3rd. We're also joined by Caroline McCusick, a PhD student in anthropology and a member of the union's executive board at UC Davis. And Krista Cortez is a first-year doctoral student at the UC Berkeley School of Education and one of the head stewards of the Berkeley unit of the UAW 2865. And today we are talking about the recent UC student workers' strike. The union said the strike was meant to draw attention to unfair labor practices by the university and a pattern of intimidation by UC administration. And we'd love to hear from you. If you work in the UC system, regardless of what you do, if you supervise grad students, if you are a grad student, or if you're an undergrad, what are your thoughts about their grievances, and what do you think this says about the current state of higher education? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. And if you used to be a member of the UC system, if you used to be a TA or a tutor, what was your experience like with both the academic quality and how you were treated as a worker? And what changes have you seen over the years? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Caroline, why don't you talk a little bit about your main grievances and what you're hearing from others at UC Davis?
Well, we've seen a history of intimidation from UC. They've been sending police against union activists to film us, to do other things that are clearly forbidden by labor law. And here at UC Davis in particular, hearing about the arrest at Santa Cruz was deeply disturbing and mobilizing for our members because we have a history of police violence against students at our campus. And it was very troubling to see this on the rise again after UC has tried to move away from those kinds of tactics, or so we thought. Now that we have President Napolitano, who has a history in law enforcement and deportation as our president, it's really scary to us that police are being sent against union activists. And it's not just our union. The campus service workers were trying to get a contract for a long time, and they experienced intimidation from UC throughout the process. And that's actually why our union went out on a solidarity strike November 20th to protest the intimidation against those workers who are already really marginalized at the university. So this is a pattern of an unhealthy relationship between UC administration and campus workers that UC has been aggressively making worse. And the arrests at Santa Cruz just demonstrate that they've taken this to a new level. So for me, and for a lot of my friends, I think that was a major reason to go out on the picket line.
What else can you tell us about the labor practices?
Well, UC not only has been intimidating student workers, but they've also been refusing to bargain over certain aspects of our working conditions. They're actually really important. We are trying to get them to bargain for a long time over class size and the 18 quarter limit, which is a rule that says that TAs can't work more than 18 quarters, which amounts to less than the average time to completion in a lot of departments. So people are left without a job and without any legal right to get a job at UC, which makes it really difficult for grad students to live, forces them to go into debt or drop out of grad school, and this just isn't healthy for the university. And for a long time, the UC simply refused to talk about any of those issues. So we filed an unfair labor practice claim against them because they didn't want to talk about class size and the 18-quarter limit. And so far, we haven't seen much substantive negotiation from them over those things. So not only did we see intimidation, but we saw this attitude to us that was very condescending, that said, we aren't going to talk about key aspects of your working conditions. We aren't going to talk about the things that really matter to you. And we don't really have any interest in engaging with these core aspects of your education and your work. And this is another reason that we had to file unfair labor practice claims.
What is the relationship between grad students and the administration?
Well, we've seen a worsening relationship as the privatization of the UC system has continued. The administration puts all of us in a bind by decreasing funding available to education and to research. And this, in the long run, is going to threaten the prestige of the UC, the ability to educate, the ability to include everyone in this university. And we, as graduate students, have been watching that process firsthand, and so have our undergraduate students, which was why there was a large wave of protests in the UC system over tuition hikes. So the student-administration relationship has really deteriorated over the last 5 to 10 years because of some belligerent, unpleasant choices made by the administration to deprioritize key aspects of this university and to prioritize instead administrative salaries and construction.
Josh.
Oh, just to jump in on that, I think you can, if you look at the priorities of the UC, the administrative group of employees has grown about 250% in the last 15 or so years, while the rest grew about 50%. And in the last 3 years, the number of folks receiving more than $200,000 grew by 44%. And so the UCs are prioritizing top administrative salaries over education. And what that means for graduate students is that we now, just in the last 2 years, for the first time ever, more than half of the graduate students accepted to the UCs go other places. They go to our competitor institutions. And the reason they do that is because they get better funding. And this is from an academic Senate report. And the faculty know this. So when we've been, you know, running this campaign about class size and graduate student support and quality of education, we've had huge amount of faculty support on every campus. There's been letters by, you know, the chairs of departments and by the faculty associations and that sort of thing supporting these concerns. One clarification, too. We are UAW-2865, and that's the union that the three of us are part of. We're also the Academic Workers for a Democratic Union is a reform movement within that, and that is the group that brought issues like class size to the table here. But it's a little complicated and confusing, and I just wanted to clarify.
Okay, well, thank you. Let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Mark in Berkeley. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show. We've got about 30 seconds.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that UC historically acts and behaves like a very well-connected institution. I mean, they're they manage the national laboratories, the nuclear weapons labs, battle to get them out of South Africa, their investment in old-growth logging upstate. I mean, they understand more than anybody that the green light is on for corruption. And so, you know, like the BP corporate contracts is directly connected to the vice chancellor bonuses. And even locally, you see officials who are quote-unquote retiring. You know, these are people who get like $200,000 plus, and like the police chief, who then, you know, then get a $500,000 retirement package and then get rehired. So this, I mean, they're just up to their neck in corruption. So in reality, the students are only window dressing to sort of remind people that they're a university.
Well, thank you for calling, Mark. I'll ask our guests to talk about the larger issues involved here. I know a lot of them have something to say about the privatization of higher education, and we'll address that right after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a program that relies on engaged listeners. You can join our conversation today by calling 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call no matter where you are, 866-798-8255. Or if you'd rather write than call, you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org. The email inbox is feedback@yourcallradio.org. feedback@yourcallradio.org. The BBC's World Have Your Say is coming up at 11, and following that at noon today, Philosophy Talk with John Perry and Ken Taylor.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about what food labels tell us about what we're eating. It seems like there are so many more food labels now. Everything from USDA organic, certified gluten-free, non-GMO, fair trade. What do these labels actually mean? And as the number of labels increase, how should we measure certification? That's tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we'll have a conversation with Murray Carpenter, author of the book Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. That's Thursday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the recent UC student workers strike. This union, Auto Workers Local 2865, represents 13,000 student workers across the UC system. They include teaching assistants, graduate student instructors, and graduate and undergraduate tutors. And they went on strike on April 2nd and 3rd to draw attention to unfair labor practices and what they say is a pattern of intimidation by UC administration. This is not new. There have been many protests over the past few years over budget cuts, large class sizes, tuition hikes, and contracts. And we're joined today by Josh Brahinsky. He's an anthropologist and a PhD student at UC Santa Cruz in the History of Consciousness Department. Josh is active in the labor reform movement within the UAW 2865. He's on the bargaining team for the Santa Cruz unit of the union, and he was the first person to be arrested while at striking at UC Santa Cruz. Caroline McCusick is a PhD student in anthropology and a member of the union's executive board at UC Davis. And Krista Cortez is a first-year doctoral student at the UC Berkeley School of Education and one of the head stewards of the Berkeley unit of the Auto UAW Local 2865. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you work in the UC system as a student or a teacher, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this latest strike? And how have you seen working conditions change over the years? What are your thoughts about intimidation? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And then what does this say about the larger question about higher education? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Caroline, would you like to address our last caller, Mark's comments, just about there's just a what he says is a pattern of corruption at the UC? He pointed to a number of things, and I know that you've got some opinions about privatization of the UC system.
Sure. I wanted to note first, I've actually resigned from the executive board recently, although I'm still active in the union. But although I think there's plenty of evidence of corruption and inside deals and all those things at the UC, it's also important to note that one thing we've seen as grad student workers is that the mundane activities of the university can be just as harmful when they're controlled by administrators who don't have education as a priority, just as harmful as the corruption and intentional malfeasances that there have been records of. So, for example, when class sizes grow, you might say from an administrative or bureaucratic position, well, that's simply necessary in order to maintain our budget or something like that. But the effect of that for students is extremely harmful. We see our students no longer getting the attention they need, and this leads to the students who need the most help, who come from the least privileged high schools and the least privileged backgrounds and the least privileged communities, having trouble in our classes. And this is something that you might not say was intentionally corrupt or intentionally a malfeasance, but nevertheless had extremely wide-ranging effects that are eroding the integrity of the university, just the way that corruption does. So without pointing to any specific instances of corruption, you can simply look on the surface of the university and see the kinds of problems manifesting themselves because of the administration's wrong priorities.
And Josh, what would you add to that?
What you're asking me about the difficulty of, or what it's like to teach, is that sort of the realm that you're thinking about?
Well, Mark was just talking about a larger issue of corruption and how your grievances fit into that. And I guess the larger question, we're getting a few emails about the privatization.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting thing because Janet Napolitano came in and, you know, has no education experience. And there's a huge amount of skepticism on the part of, and looking at her history in Arizona and in Homeland Security, gave us a tremendous amount of skepticism about whether or not she would be willing to do anything to turn the tide when we're thinking about how the university is privatized and where the priorities are. And what we're experiencing is there is not a difference. I mean, what they've done with every union, every union was, AFSCME was trying to make a big change in their working conditions, and the only way they could do it was they threatened a 5-day strike, and the university settled the contract right before it, like hours before it, and they did it again with the other AFSCME local. And so what the game that they're playing with the unions is intimidate, escalate, and try not to change fundamentally how they're running the university. And I don't think that Napolitano has brought any change in that, which is maybe unsurprising, but bad.
Have you felt the change since she's taken the job?
That's the thing. We don't see any change in sort of the system. The one thing that we do see is that we see this increase in hostility to unions. Mm. And that may be a top-down thing, and it may be just something that she's letting happen. But there's been sort of an exceptional amount of aggression on the UC's part. In fact, our contract negotiations are so difficult that we offered mediation this week, because we're hearing from people all over the state. They're like, can you settle a contract? Can you solve this problem? And we want to solve these problems. The things that we're working on with quality of education, these are things that we all care about, faculty care about. So at Santa Cruz, when we had 22 people arrested, we had faculty coming to us and saying, is there any way that you can settle this with the university? Because they don't seem interested at all. And we said, well, we'll try. We'll ask them to mediate it, and maybe that will create a process by which we can actually communicate the things that we care most about and be heard.
UC System spokeswoman Diane Klein said in a statement that our offers have included wage increases, child care subsidies, extended leaves, and other improvements. Quote, we strongly disagree with the union's characterization that we have engaged in unfair labor practices. We're disappointed that they have chosen to strike, even as we continue to negotiate and make progress toward an agreement. A strike won't resolve the issues that remain on the table. Instead, it unfairly hurts other students and their ability to achieve their academic goals, end quote. How would you respond to that, Caroline?
Well, I would simply say the university can disagree all at once with our claim that we've suffered from unfair labor practices, but the Public Employee Relations Board, PERB, which adjudicates over these issues, has said on multiple occasions that the UC has indeed violated our rights, has illegally intimidated us, and has broken the law. So the UC can bluster all at once about disagreeing with our claims, but the fact is that they've done what they've done, and they can't back away from that. Now, their claims about the things they've offered us in our contract have lots of issues with them, and I'm sure Josh could probably speak to them more because he's on the bargaining team.
I mean, what I could say is since December, the university has not given us responses on almost every major issue that we've been negotiating about. There's one which we are making progress on, which is important. It's non-discrimination, and we're working towards getting access to gender-neutral bathrooms, and that's a fantastic, important thing that costs the university pretty much nothing. But in issues of pay, on issues of, and basically the way the pay, the proposal that we've made about economics says this: we have this gap between us and our competitor institutions as defined by the Academic Senate, and the gap is roughly $3,000 to $5,000 a year. And when we're talking about $17,000 salary, $3,000 to $5,000 a year is a lot. And so this gap, this is the reason that grad students are choosing to go elsewhere when they're accepted to the UCs. And we need to fix that, because if we want to be a number one institution, or at least a good one, one of the top, then we actually need to pay people enough so that they'll come here. And we've been saying that to them, and they have not given us a wage proposal since December. We've been talking about class sizes and how that's a huge problem for education, and they've not responded at all to the class size proposal that we gave them back in October. We've been working to ensure that undocumented students have access to certain kinds of fellowships, and there's been essentially no response to the proposal that we made, that we say we extend these fellowship accesses and internship access to undocumented graduate students. So I think it's very clear that when you look at the important issues, the ones that we put on the table and said we really need to talk about, there's been essentially no movement since December. We're in bargaining today, and we've offered mediation, and so, you know, you can always hope.
Hmm. Well, and Krista, you have a unique perspective here because you've attended private schools. This is your first year at a public school. You're a first-year doctoral student at the UC Berkeley School of Education. I understand that you really didn't think about privatization before coming to UC Berkeley. Tell us a little bit about your experience. What's really surprised you about being involved as one of the head stewards of the union?
Well, you're correct. So I'm coming here from the East Coast. So, you know, my experience with California has definitely been colored by my experience at the UC. And so I would have to say it wasn't something that I was looking for. I hadn't really heard much about the privatization of the UC. But when I got here, there is a very real presence on campus where you can feel it, right? There's certain changes. I mean, as a student of color walking into this space, you know, there's this nostalgia that comes with thinking of Berkeley as, you know, the birth of, you know, these activist movements and political change. And coming here, that energy, while, you know, you can still find it, is very stifled. And there's this very real feeling of being scared, that, you know, professors won't work with you, being scared that your fellowship, you know, may not come around next year, being, you know, afraid that people, you know, won't be on your committee, won't offer you a teaching position, because you're passionate about issues, because you want to be treated fairly, you know, and especially as a student of color in California at the UCs, there's very, you know, I mean, it's sad to say, but we still face a lot of the same issues that we were fighting to change, you know, back in the 60s and 70s when there was a much larger presence, activist presence on the campus.
What causes you to be afraid? What kind of intimidation have you personally faced?
Well, I said earlier, I'm not teaching right now. And so I don't have, you know, a personal, you know, vignette on that. But I do know people who are. And especially, you know, when you're put in a position where you're GSIing for your advisor and you're being overworked, it's a very thin line that you can walk between feeling like, you know, you're going to sully the relationship with the person that you have to work with for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And it's a very unfair position to be in, but I think it's exacerbated by your person of colorness, by feeling like you already don't belong in this space, by feeling like you got here, you know, because you worked hard, but that, you know, it's not getting any easier. And in fact, you feel like things are obstacles are being thrown in your way. And so I'm speaking very generally, but I think, you know, you could read into that if you want.
How much solidarity do you feel you have from other members of the faculty, like, say, you know, longtime professors? Because, Josh, in a couple articles, a number of professors said that while they weren't striking, they were officially supporting the strike, the American Federation of Teachers, for example. But do you feel like you have solidarity among other members of the faculty?
My sense is that it's a real mix. So there are faculty who come out with us, and there are faculty who are intimidating their employees and telling them not to strike and threatening them. It's hard to give a clear answer. Just recently at Santa Cruz, there was actually a real burst of faculty support after the arrests. And a whole bunch of faculty came out to the picket the next day, and they wrote letters, and they're talking to the administration and trying to get them to drop the charges against the folks who were arrested, and basically giving a message, which I think is something that's growing among faculty, which is they're saying to the UCs, this strategy of sort of taking your unions to the edge of a strike is not good for anybody. You need to actually negotiate and try to settle contracts and bring labor peace, and that's what they've been saying to us. I think they're right, because it creates a lot of chaos, and you know, there's times when we need to strike and we take it very seriously, but we also want to get a good contract.
That is Josh Brahinsky. He's an anthropologist and PhD student at UC Santa Cruz. He's been active in the labor reform movement within the UAW 2865 and is on the bargaining team for the Santa Cruz unit of the local union. He was one of the first people to be arrested on the first day of the strike at UC Santa Cruz. Caroline McCusick is a PhD student in anthropology and active in her union. And Krista Cortez is a first-year doctoral student at the UC Berkeley School of Education and one of the head stewards of the local union there. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. If you are a student or a member of a UC or a UC staffer, we'd love to hear from you, past or present. What do you think about this strike? How have you seen the work of graduate students change over the years? And what does this say about the current state of higher education? The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Andrew in San Francisco. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me. So I just had a couple comments. One, I think this is great because it highlights the fact that graduate students who are going after doctorates are workers just like the individual who's taking out the trash. This provides an opportunity for workers to identify with each other. The second one is, if doctorate students are getting messed with, then you know the janitor's getting messed with. And then the question is, how much? What's the relationship between the student unions and other groups like cafeteria workers, janitors, so on and so forth?
Great question. Thank you. Caroline, do you want to take that one first? What is the relationship like?
Well, we've worked closely with other unions on campus, including AFSCME 3299, which represents service workers, workers in the hospitals. And we went on strike with them on November 20th in a solidarity strike, which is a labor action that you don't see very often these days. And our struggle has been entwined with theirs. They've faced very similar issues like intimidation, and they've faced issues like really high workloads, dangerous workloads that are threatening the patients and the students. And we see the same thing when our class sizes increase. So we've seen a parallel attitude on behalf of UC administration to all of these workers, and that's why we've tried to work with them. I know Josh has worked very closely with AFSCME activists at Santa Cruz as well.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, the AFSCME the union paid for our lunch for the strike that we just had. They paid for the lunch actually statewide, and we work very closely with them. Another issue that we share, at Santa Cruz, we have what is called contracting out, where they take the university takes TA positions and pays them about a quarter of what they pay us and hires undergrads to do the same work. And it's not good for the work, and it's not good for the people who get the work. And so we had what was actually close to a strike. Right at this moment, we're not under contract. And so when we're not under contract, we don't have what's called a no-strike clause. And so when we have grievances that are local, there are not many ways to solve them if the university is not willing to solve them. And so this grievance we filed, and they wouldn't solve it, and there was no arbitration. And so the only option at the end of that process is something like a strike. And so we called a strike about this particular issue, and they did their sort of typical thing and waited till the last second. But the day before the strike, they paid 28 undergrads $6,000 each in back pay because they their jobs had been contracted out and underpaid. And this is a similar issue, basically the same issue that AFSCME was working on with contracting out, and they won that I think a week or two. Right around that same time, they were fighting about the same issue, and so our issues resonated really closely, and we worked together on them.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling, Andrew. We have an email from Carl who says, as someone who got my PhD at UC a while back, we all bought the apprenticeship Kool-Aid and so didn't offer much resistance. I don't have a lot of regrets, though it was an extremely futile system, and I got out of grad school with a lot more debt than I probably should have. Given the current trend toward escalating exploitation of grad students and lecturers and higher education, I think what Krista, Caroline, and Joshua are doing is enlightened and heroic. Keep it up. Thanks for the email, Carl. And let's hear next from Paloma Connolly. She's a freshman at UC Santa Cruz who also got arrested earlier this month. Hi, Paloma. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
So thanks for calling in. So why did you decide to take part in the strike?
Well, basically, I was at the picket line to show my support for the TAs. I recognize how important they have been in my education, and when their right to strike is infringed upon, it's obvious to me that I'd be there in solidarity.
Well,
I think...
As a freshman, what is your relationship like with teaching assistants?
Well, I've had a number of big lecture classes, and the TAs are there to really explain the material. The material that is more difficult is much more easy to grasp with the support of the TAs, with our sections, and which is, I mean, it is quite a bit more difficult to learn with such large class sizes, and so what the TAs are fighting for directly impacts my learning at this campus.
And what charges, what are the charges against you?
There are four charges. Some include not leaving the scene of a riot or intending to riot. I think jaywalking. It's four misdemeanor charges that most of us were charged with.
And what are you hearing from other students about the strike and just their overall relationship with graduate student workers?
Well, I think a lot of people are in support of the graduate students. I think students have made the same connection that I've made, that their working conditions are my learning conditions. I think that, however, some students have been really opposed to the strike for whatever reason. I think people have their own ideas of how these things should be settled, and I think that there has been some people have found the strike problematic, but there have also certainly been other students very much in support of the strike and also in support of us that were arrested.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Paloma.
Thank you.
That is Paloma Connolly. She's a freshman at UC Santa Cruz who also was arrested earlier this month. And let's go next to Emily in San Francisco, who is a professor at UC Berkeley. Hi, Emily. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks very much. Thanks for focusing on these issues. I'm a professor currently. I was also a GSI during strikes back in the 1990s, so it's sort of interesting to hear from both sides. I want to applaud all the efforts of trying to work on the learning conditions issue. And one issue I wanted to raise is in terms of the privatization of the university, we definitely need to look at the big picture about the California budget and the support that the UCs have in the legislature. And so I wanted to raise the issue of sort of how we can focus on sort of working together as a community for some of those issues, because I think, the rate of support from the state, I think right now, at least for in our department, is about 8%. So the privatization is sort of already there. How do we try to put pressure in terms of having public support for the UC system? Because it's an amazing system, and it would be a tragedy for it to really dip in quality.
And Emily, since you're a professor at UC Berkeley, I know this is a big question, but how do you define privatization in this context?
Well, I mean, privatization might not be the right word. I think looking at the level of state funding that we have has just dipped dramatically. From my point of view, I think we need to be pragmatic about looking for all the sources of funding that we can have to support the quality of the university, as long as it doesn't compromise our values in terms of taking money from interests that might, and somehow impact freedom of speech or other kinds of academic values. So I think we have to be creative and pragmatic in terms of looking at the funding options, but I think we also need to focus on the larger state support. I don't know if that's answering your question.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it seems like there are a couple different things going on here. And Josh, we've only got about 3 minutes left. So, I mean, where do you see this going? Because it seems like you're dealing with budget cuts. I mean, a lot of grievances in terms of unfair labor practices. And then again, as you're all saying, you're seeing a pattern of intimidation, calling legal strikes illegal, for example. So where do you see this going? And what do you think is most effective on your part?
Well, I mean, I think what Emily said is true, is that there is a decrease in state funding. And that is something, that we've, experienced over the last 10 years, and that's really significant. I think there's also, so in the long run, that is part of the solution. But there are many short-term solutions as well. And so if you take it back one step, I think there's also a real significant problem with the UC's priorities and the way they're using their funding right now. And so if we can all speak up as a community and say, we need to prioritize education, and then you take it back another step and say, well, in order to do that, that means we need to de-escalate our relationship with our unions who are caring about these kinds of things and actually try to solve problems with them instead of try to intimidate them. So I think that those are the three levels. And as a union, we're trying to mediate this negotiation. We're also trying to, you know, and that's one question, and then we're trying to settle these unfair labor practice charges and deal with that. What's happening within the union is that people are mobilizing, and they're very upset about what's happened over the last couple of weeks and what happened in the strike. So that's another piece that we are sort of facing. I think that might give part of an answer. I don't know, Caroline, if you have more to say about that.
Yeah, Caroline, 30 seconds.
I'll simply say that I think our struggle is going to go beyond settling a contract whenever that does happen, because it's going to take a lot of work to change the way this administration thinks about the university, change the way that they think about workers as something to exploit and students as something to raise tuition money for. And we're going to have to do a lot more work for a long time before we can change this. But I think this has been the seed of a struggle to put education first, to put justice and equality at this university before administrative bloat. And I'm really looking forward to what comes next.
All right, and we'll definitely continue to follow this issue. Caroline McCusick is a PhD student in anthropology and active in the union at UC Davis. Krista Cortez is a first-year doctoral student at the UC Berkeley School of Education and an active member of the union. And Josh Brahinsky is a PhD student at UC Santa Cruz on the bargaining team. He was the first person to be arrested during the strike earlier this month. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What do food labels tell us about what we're eating? On the next Your Call, we're talking about labels like organic and fair trade. Studies show that sales increase by 10% because of food labels. But what do they mean exactly? How are these labels enforced in the U.S. and abroad? And as the number of labels increase, how should we measure certification? And how does a label change the way you think about and buy your food? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Hannah Baba and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.